welcome to Educationally Speaking. My name is Sarah Davis, and I'm a communication specialist with Oakland Schools and the host of this podcast. The goal of Educationally Speaking is to focus on important topics related to education that affect students, parents, teachers, and administrators. Today, we're going to tackle an education issue that is affecting the entire state. This year, there has been a huge uptick in the amount of staff who have left the education profession due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Many teachers in particular are retiring, but the issue is touching every aspect of the education field, from superintendents to bus drivers. According to a recent article in Crain's Detroit Business, state records show that from August 2020 to February 2021, there was a 44% increase in mid-year retirements compared to the same period in 2019-2020, as 749 teachers left public school classrooms in the middle of the school year. In our January Educationally Speaking podcast titled, Where Are They? Why Students Are Increasingly Leaving the Classroom, we explored why more students have left school due to the pandemic. Now we want to look at the staff side of the equation and discuss this loss that is occurring, as well as some solutions for that loss. Joining me today to talk about this topic are Karen Olex, Executive Director of Special Populations at Oakland Schools, Dr. Christopher Lee, Teacher Induction and Social Studies Consultant with Oakland Schools, Carol Diglio, Assistant Superintendent of Human Resources for Oak Park Schools, who actually has such a passion for this topic that she came out of retirement, and Kara Lougheed, who was the 2019-2020 Michigan Teacher of the Year. Thank you all for being here. I'm so humbled to be speaking with such an esteemed and accomplished group. So first, let's try to get a handle on this situation. Carol, can you talk a little bit about some of the recent data associated with this loss at the district level?
Absolutely. It's hard to talk just at the district level, as this is really complicated nationwide. Some of the research that I've been following through the Learning Policy Institute started to come out in 2016. And I think all of our districts, not only in Michigan, but across the country, are feeling the complications of fewer teachers going into the profession. There is data that says it's as high as 35% fewer young people are choosing education as a major when they go to college. And the most recent ACT test showed that 5% of our students taking the ACT said they consider education, which is a 29% decline from the 2010-2014 years. So when we look at what is happening at the district and state and national level, we see far fewer teachers coming into the profession, and then we see a very large group of people leaving the profession. Only about 12% have left the profession due to retirement. The rest are leaving to leave the profession. And that's a great concern. And then the data that you shared earlier, the mid-year retirements, complicates things because it really has an impact on the classroom and the learning community as a whole. It's a disruption in relationships, a disruption in routine. And that's where we really see things at the district levels when we're losing folks mid-year and we don't have the same consistent teacher in the classroom.
Absolutely. Okay, very interesting stats, especially that one about, you know, it's not all retirements. It's people just not sticking with the profession anymore. Chris, do you have anything to add from what you've seen at the ISD level?
Yes, Sarah. Thanks for having us on the podcast. Really appreciate it. I think the first thing is I think back to when I graduated in 2018 with my doctorate. I had been at Michigan for 6-7 years at that time. And so I had watched a number of undergraduate classes come and go. And even back from 2011 to 2018, we were seeing the numbers of undergraduates slowly but steadily declining. So that by the end of my time at the University of Michigan, it was very, very concerning. I mean, they were talking about having to, even cut some lines of funding for professorships. So it was bad back then. Now, on top of that, since I've come to Oakland Schools and have been working on the new teacher induction program, we've seen that, I would talk to districts and say, how many teachers do you expect to hire in the next year? Because we were trying to get a sense of how we should plan as a program for the coming school year. And I would hear districts say, we're expecting to hire, 10 new teachers or 5 new teachers or 15 new teachers. Inevitably, I mean, without fail, districts would hire 50 to 100% more than what they had originally told me. So what that's telling me is that even from early on before the pandemic, 5 years ago, we were seeing districts churning through new teachers more quickly than they had anticipated, right? So pre-pandemic, we're seeing this churn. It's not just teachers leaving districts, leaving the profession, it's also teachers churning through districts. So you have teachers that are in charter schools coming to one group of public school districts. And then you have another group of teachers that are in one group of public school districts going to another set of public school districts. So there's churn and there's loss, right? And then on top of all that, we have the pandemic, which exacerbated the already very dangerous situation we have with regard to new teachers and the shortage of new teachers. This is not the shortages of the past. You know, we've always had these sort of waves of teacher shortages. In my opinion, those shortages have been cyclical. Like for example, the last shortage we had was really as a result of the Great Recession. This shortage is both cyclical and structural, and that's a real problem.
Absolutely. So thanks, Chris, for that. That kind of gives us a good overview of the problem. And as I understand it from talking with all of you, the reasons for why teachers and other education professionals are leaving the field is varied and complex. And there's no way we can cover everything in this podcast, but we'll try to get through the biggies. So it seems that the reasons for staff leaving branches off into two different avenues, policy issues and culture changes. So first, we're going to talk strictly about the policy issues. Carol, from your point of view, what are some things going on policy-wise which are currently causing this exodus?
It's a great question. I think policy is important. Structure, predictability, process is all really important. The hard part about policy is sometimes policy is made and it's not connected to practice. There were a lot of policy changes. And we can go back to 2008, as Chris mentioned, the recession. I don't think we've ever recovered fully. Schools across the board have never recovered fully from the recession and the number of pay cuts that schools took due to the recession and the number of programs that were lost. And when we talk about policy and we talk about decisions made about pay, so many of us lost social workers, counselors, psychs, our support ancillary staff that really is paramount to students in school today. We talk so much about the social emotional support of it. But if we jump to 2010 and we talk policy, you had a Michigan merit curriculum change where we went from 1 required credit to 18 required credits. The teacher tenure law, where we went from 4 years for tenure to 5 years. And that law also made it clear that seniority no longer is a major factor. Policy change of the hard cap for insurance. Retirement went to a 401k. Our evaluation system changed drastically. And when you look at policies and what we want to do as a state and nation to prepare kids, a lot of that is around technology, CTE, and things like that. And so much of that has been cut from 2008. So when we talk about policy and what policy wants to see us do at the ground level for education, the two are not speaking clearly enough. The basic needs in many schools, basic needs are not being met. Yet the policy is saying we're going to increase tenure, we're going to take away rights of negotiators, and I'm a chief negotiator, so I do contracts, but it's difficult for our teaching staff. We're going to put a hard cap, we're going to take away your retirement, we're going to increase the evaluation system, but we want you to do more for less. And I'll say it's not all about money. Teachers, educators, administrators, paraprofessional bus drivers want to just be supported. Yes, that does equate to a paycheck. That is part of it. But other is making sure we financially are able to support the basic needs of our educators so that we can elevate as policy wants us to. And so there's a lot of work between those two pieces.
Absolutely. Thanks for that, Carol. And Karen, you're able to give a unique perspective of what is going on in the special education sector. What are some things taking place just in special ed that are causing issues?
So I kind of support what Carol had said, and some examples of that is a special educator's job responsibilities are usually so much more vast than that of a general education teacher. Special educators are often required to have a working knowledge of each grade level curriculum, or in the secondary level, whatever the discipline curriculum is of that, whether it be social studies or science. So they have a working knowledge of that, as well as a real good understanding of individual disabilities, learning disabled, cognitively impaired, emotionally impaired, the students on the autism spectrum. They have to understand the curriculum as well as the disabilities in relationship to what individual students needs academically in order to be successful, what their social emotional needs are, and what their behavioral needs are. Special educators also have to be well versed in co-teaching, inclusion, collaboration, instructional strategies, assistive technology, as well as holding a really solid understanding of IDEA law and the Michigan rules and regulations which govern that IDEA law here in Michigan. This requires extra hours of training for the special educator outside of the already extensive university preparation that they have to undergo to even get a teaching credential. Because a special educator is required to be a general educator first before they can even move toward a special education endorsement. So in reality, special educators have already spent significantly more time preparing to become a teacher, whether it be taking classes which cost money or just doing professional learning to understand. Yet they always enter the field on the entry-level pay scale. For them. In addition, special educators often describe their jobs as overwhelming. They're required to complete a staggering amount of paperwork. They have to document individually on each student's and the services that those students receive, as well as progress each student makes towards goals and objectives that are determined at the annual meeting or the IEP meeting that happens. This requires hours of preparation, coordination with other staff that have to attend it, and time to actually do the documenting. This is all above and beyond the creation of lesson plans and the execution of those lesson plans. So the clerical requirements of special educators are large and vast, and special educators who leave the field often cite the fact that they cannot achieve a balance between creating and executing lessons, teaching the students, as well as meeting the demands of all the clerical and managerial or non-traditional duties that they have to do, as well as their home life balance.
All right, thanks for that insight, Karen. I think a lot of times, you know, the special ed teaching population kind of gets overlooked, and we're always focusing on the general ed. So I'm really happy to have that perspective for this important discussion here today. Now let's get to the culture part, which I suspect is just as much of the issue here as policy problems. Chris, you've been at this for a while. You started Oakland School's new teacher induction program 5 years ago, because the fact of the matter is, and I think you already mentioned this earlier, is we were having trouble recruiting and retaining teachers even then. And in fact, we had a podcast with you on it where we talked about this issue before the pandemic. COVID has just exacerbated a problem that the state has already had, correct?
Yes, and before we jump into the culture, I actually want to say one more thing about policy, if I could. One thing that we didn't talk about was that the state has a requirement that all new teachers in the first 3 years of their career receive an additional 90 hours of professional development. So what that means is that any teacher that's just starting in Michigan has to recertify basically every 5 years. And that's 30 hours per year, 150 hours in 5 years. Over and above that 150 hours in the first 5 years, they have to have an additional 90 hours in their first 3 years if they're in the first 3 years of their career. So think about that. In the first 3 years of your career, you have to have 60 hours of professional development outside of your normal workday. I mean, that is a lot. And it's not to say that new teachers don't need that extra time to learn their craft and to learn how to do their job well and to be supported by their mentors and ancillary staff and ISD staff, right? But what is to say is it's a lot. And that 90 hours of those 90 new teacher hours in the first 3 years of a teacher's career, that's something that has not really been looked at again in a way that thinks about, is this something we want to continue? It hasn't been reevaluated in light of the teacher shortage and also in light of the COVID-19 pandemic. So I think on policy, that's a really important thing to remember as well, in addition to everything that Karen and Carol said. In terms of, you know, the culture, I think that, you know, what we've seen in the last year and a half has been a real whiplash, right? We've seen teachers before the pandemic being treated as they've been treated for decades, which is something less than what they really are, which is professionals with advanced degrees and certifications, multiple advanced degrees and certifications. And then the pandemic hits and teachers are forced to teach from home and do something that has never been done in living memory, probably ever, right? And so teachers are heroes. But then once we come back to school and people want to try and get back to normal, but the pandemic is still raging, all that is forgotten. All that work has been forgotten. And so now teachers in the popular imagination have been put back into this place where, you know, we like our teacher, but teachers in general don't need a raise. Teachers in general don't need more support, right? So there's been a real whiplash culturally, I think, in the last year and a half. And that, you know, it's normally just bad for teachers, but it's been a real back and forth for us in the last year and a half.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for that history lesson, Chris. And there's no one else better to speak to this issue than Kara. Kara, can you talk a little bit about how this last year has been and the culture shift you have seen as a teacher?
Sure. It's been something to behold, that's for sure. I think that Chris brought up a lot of really good points about how teachers have been treated, and I think it got worse after the recession of 2008 when districts had to really tighten their belts, and teachers felt the brunt of that, and a lot of times took pay cuts or furlough days or increased payments and benefits and all of those things to help the districts, and then really never recouped any of that. And so then you add this pandemic onto all of that and all the extra things that we're being asked to do in addition to the extra things we were already doing. And what that leads to is a lot of exhausted, frustrated people. And when you have people like that in front of kids, then the kids think, well, why would I want to be a teacher if this is how they're treated and this is how stressed out they are? And that's hurting our profession too, because we are in front of the people who we want to be teachers someday, and then they don't want to be teachers. And we don't do it on purpose. You know, I make sure to try to leave my stress outside of my classroom and like really be present with my students. But they can tell. And I think what layered on top of that even too is that some districts, mine did not, but some districts then also asked teachers to basically do two jobs at once, be an online teacher and a classroom teacher at the same time. And I'm telling you, I've been doing this for 22 years and being an in-person classroom teacher is hard enough. I can't imagine trying to do both because teaching students online is not the same job as teaching students in front of you in a classroom. And a lot of districts just acted like it was. And there's only so many times that you can say to someone, just figure it out on your own, before they're just like, no, I'm done. I don't have to do this. I can work someplace else. And that's what we're seeing. Or I can retire, right? That's what we're seeing. And I want to circle back to what Karen was saying, because this is even more exacerbated in our special education teachers, because you heard that list of all the things special education teachers have to do. And now they have to do it also online, or they have to do it when the kids aren't here every day, because attendance is also a huge issue this year, getting kids to show up to school once we actually open the schools and get people back in seats. And so we have our general education teachers under an immense amount of pressure, and then our special education teachers have that pressure plus everything they have to do with their caseload students. And it's been, I mean, I do tell everyone that, hey, at least we're now all experts in pandemic teaching. Like, they can't bring someone in to tell us how to do it because we all did it.
Right, like the straw that broke the camel's back.
Right.
Thank you for that, Kara. And we've already kind of touched on this, but Karen, like we mentioned, culture is a huge issue within the special education field right now as well. What are some culture problems those professionals are experiencing?
So like Kara said, they have all the general ed responsibilities and then all their caseload responsibilities. They're with an uptake of advocates being involved, claiming students aren't getting what they needed, and which is requiring even more documentation. So the special educator has to wear so many hats. They're the liaisons with parents, administrators, community mental health to make sure the kids get what they need outside of the school setting, that their extra time is often used up, for lack of a better, they have to spend a lot of their time making sure students receive everything they're entitled to in order to receive FAPE to keep the district out of any kind of complaint situation. This leaves very little time for them to just hang out, if you will, which affects the culture that they have. They're often not invited into committees, invited into social settings, invited to go to lunch, sometimes because they just don't have time to do that. I mean, you work through your lunch hour, not that other teachers don't, but a lot of times they're just trying to meet all the requirements that they have to do. It becomes overwhelming and they feel very isolated. They feel very isolated in the sense that they're not included in that. So it's this vicious circle of I'm not included, but I don't have time to be included. And that all affects the way they feel in the culture of the building.
Yeah, that's interesting. And something you wouldn't really think about is just, you know, this a simple thing like having the time to go out to lunch with colleagues or engage with them on a more personal and fun level. So where it's not just work all day long, and how that can affect the culture of a profession as well. Okay, so we have a list of problems occurring in the education field. How do we turn things around? Chris, why don't you start us out?
Sure, I think it's, yeah, it's really important that we end this on some sort of solution-oriented basis. I mean, we've been talking a lot about how hard it is, but I think that we have some real potential here to turn things around, but it's going to take work. I think all of us would agree that this is not going to fix itself. And so one of the things we've been doing at Oakland Schools, as we've talked about before for a number of years, is with the new teacher induction program, I think the primary thing that we help new teachers with is we network them with other new teachers, right? We help them feel a sense of belonging, a sense of community to other professionals. In general, people that are networked together get better together. And so that, I think, is the primary value add that we have in the program. The secondary one, which is a more compliance driven, it goes back to this 90 new teacher hours. We help provide the 90 new teacher hours for these new teachers. We do that through quarterly meetings, and we also do that through curated list of online professional learning opportunities. Also this year, for the first time, we're providing some summer opportunities, some book clubs. We're gonna be reading Cultivating Genius by Goldie Muhammad with our new teachers. And also we're going to be doing a drop-in on some special summer work that teachers are doing with students, the Oakland Youth Innovation Lab. We're going to have our new teachers come in and observe some of the displays and some of the project presentations that students have in hopes that it'll spark their imagination in terms of what they can do with their own students. So lots of opportunities for new teacher hours and opportunities we think will be helpful and will further contribute to that networking. I think also it's really important to consider our role as advocates for teachers. At the ISD, we have a really unique opportunity to advocate both up at the state level and down, that's not a negative term, but down to the districts, right? In terms of our organizational level. That's why we're sort of an intermediate school district, right? We're between the state and the districts. And so I think at the state level, we can advocate with the state Department of Education. But I also think that there's a really important role for ISDs to advocate with our state legislature. A lot of the things that we've been talking about today, frankly, come from the state legislature and come from people that have little to no experience in the field of education. And I think what we need to do is take seriously our role in advocating with our elected officials. I'm not suggesting that we advocate for one particular political party or the other. What I am suggesting is that it is in the interest of all Michiganders to advocate for certain policies that benefit teachers. Because in my opinion is that when you work for teachers, 99.9% of the time you're working for students as well. And so I think there's a role in terms of advocating for specific policies with the legislature, but there's also a role in helping districts come together and work together. You know, in Oakland County, we have 28 public school districts and a number of public school academies. A lot of times it's easier and better to do things at scale, and that's really what we specialize in. And so the new teacher induction program is an example of that. We help provide these hours at scale for our districts. And that's our role as a service agency. So I think that we sort of work middle out at the ISD, and there are different kinds of things we can advocate for. And lastly, I want to say, I think in our local communities, it's really important that we advocate as citizens with our school boards. A lot of times our school boards, I watched our school board in my hometown work tirelessly for hours and hours at school board meetings during the COVID-19 pandemic. That said, sometimes school board members are still disconnected from the reality of teaching and teachers at the ground level. And so it's important to remind them about those realities as Karen and Kara were talking about, and to advocate for policies at the really the ground local level that are going to affect teachers in a positive way and make them want to come back, not just to your own home district, but to districts throughout the state.
Great, thank you for that insight, Chris. Karen, do you have any suggestions?
So yeah, but I guess I thought about this from more of a practical standpoint and more of a hands-on standpoint regarding special education, but really for all, it could be for all educators, is I think the mentor-mentee program is huge for all educators. And I think in the special education world, to have a special educator mentor to help with the IDEA rules, what you need, all the paperwork, all the requirements, everything in that sense of it, but also to assign a special educator, a general educator mentor to help them with the building. What's recess like? When's lunch? What's all of that? I think that will help go for a long way to keep students or keep teachers involved in the culture and help them feel like they're part of everything. I think it's really important that administrators and principals don't underestimate their influence on teachers, general or special educators. I think making an extra effort to include especially special educators on building committees and school activities, because again, they get really busy and they're not always there to volunteer. I think creating professional learning communities with the special educator in mind and helping general educators join that professional learning community will increase dialogue between those and help the people all feel part of the culture. I think sponsoring some training for the building or for even the district regarding how to teach diverse learners, as well as training on how to help with specific behaviors, how to help with student behaviors controlling or avoiding student behaviors, I think globally helps special educators and general educators feel part of the community as well. I think promoting time for general and special educators to meet, to collaborate, just to talk to each other, giving them time, you kind of hear the theme is time and money, because everything is money, time and money for that. I think identifying giving some kind of extra support to the special educator when it comes to all their clerical duties. Maybe they don't have to be done by this, but maybe there can be somebody else to do that, might help with their feeling of wanting to stay in a building. And then providing professional learning opportunities. I know that we have a lot of, we actually just published our special education professional learning catalog that we tie with the general ed professional learning catalog for the upcoming school year, because again, everybody's welcome to take everything. And I think the more that principals or administrators can allow special educators and general educators to grow and learn in their areas, helps people stay in the field. And then this is just a way outside of the box thought, that way back in the olden days when I was in school, I spent my junior and senior year going to the elementary to help tutor. And that solidified the fact that I wanted to be a teacher. I was helping students back then. I knew what it was. So maybe reestablishing the teacher, future teacher programs, giving people some students some time to see what a great field it could be. So those are my thoughts on how to help with that.
Great list, Karen. Carol?
There are so many opportunities, I think, for us to problem solve. I feel a bit frustrated about it. I feel like we, in areas of education, have evolved, and we understand more today than ever what our learners need, what our kids need. But I think we continue to stuff our profession in a 19th century model, and that needs to change. You know, structurally, we've remained the same. And I really believe that as a nation, we say that education is a foundation of our country, yet I don't see us taking or prioritizing education as a nation the way we should. And in order to modernize what we're doing, we really need to prioritize education. And regardless of your race, your social economic status, where you live and grow up, you deserve the same rights and the same opportunities for a high quality education. You know, much of what we've talked about, the exodus and fewer teachers, if you're in a urban area, it's far more difficult to fill vacancies. If you are in an urban area and have trouble filling vacancies, it's 71% more difficult filling special ed vacancies. So when we look at modernizing, or when we look at problem solving, we have to level the playing field, which goes to policy because of how the state aid works. So we have to look at policy, but we also have to look at what are we delivering to kids? What opportunities are we given based on the 2008 recession and the Michigan Merit Curriculum? A lot of our hands-on classes have gone by the wayside. So a lot of our elective courses that attract kids, a lot of our woodworking, automotive, anything, electrical, try and hire an HVAC person today. All of those classes that kids are attracted to have been eliminated in a lot of areas. We need to start thinking, as Karen said, outside of the box of maybe we need a traditional education in one area, but maybe we need to give choice to kids in another area and be more flexible in what we expect from kids who have a different desire other than a four-year college. We make these assumptions when we say college ready that kids can afford college. Today, it's very difficult to do that. We make the assumption that they enjoy being in school. They might enjoy learning, but not in a traditional setting. And we need to go more towards that as education as a whole and work together in this. Much of what I push for when I'm in a school district is to create a school district versus a district of schools. And I feel like across the nation, we're in our districts and we do the same to each other, as Chris was talking about earlier, that we, you know, why do we operate all the time in these silos of 28 districts in Oakland County instead of really breaking those walls down and sharing each other's, you know, successes and sharing each other's facilities, sharing each other's, problems and working together as a whole. You know, I know that's a big shift in thinking, but we need to have way more partnerships. We need to give kids opportunities, like Karen said, tutoring. But why not start working your junior, senior year in partnerships in your community, whether it's in an automotive factory, tool and die, all of those things that kids could very well be interested in. Technology, you know, why isn't coding a required class in our schools right now? I mean, we need coders like there's no tomorrow. We don't have it as a requirement, but we have other things as a requirement. So modernizing can go in so many different directions, from curriculum to furniture to facilities, technology, to all these different opportunities we offer kids to keep them engaged in the school day and learning. That takes money, which means we need to rethink policy and prioritize education and how we look at it. And what are we really doing and offering children today in the 2021 year and moving forward? We talk a lot about 21st century education. I still feel like we're operating in a model that is archaic.
Sarah, can I jump in there for just 2 seconds?
Please do.
So one of the things that Carol said, and this might be a little controversial, but I'll go ahead and say it. One of the things that Carol said was this idea of competition among the districts. And, you know, I am a transplant from Florida to Michigan. And in Florida, districts are counties and counties are districts. So in Hillsborough County, we had like 25 high schools, right? So there was definitely movement between schools in a county, but it was all the same district. And because we have 28 districts in one county, I've been told that years ago, there was some sort of unwritten agreements between districts that they wouldn't allow sort of mid-year transfers between districts, right? Because that would sort of upset the balance. And from what I've been told now is that it's kind of the Wild West, right? That districts will gladly take teachers from other neighboring districts without even a call, right? And that's because each district has a constituency and each school board has voters that elect them, right? And so I think what Carol was getting at and what I really want to endorse is this idea of moving away from the idea that, you know, I'm electing the school board from my district and these are my kids in my district. No. All these kids in these neighborhoods that are in our neighborhoods, next to our neighborhoods, two neighborhoods away, these are all our kids, right? And until we start thinking about the idea that the decisions we make in each district affect the districts next to us, and next to them, we're going to have a hard time solving this problem of churn between districts. It might not solve the problem. It might not address the problem of, you know, bringing new teachers into the profession. But certainly, the issue of churn is affected by how districts choose to or choose not to cooperate with one another. And so, I think that's one of the things that maybe Carol was kind of hinting at, but I want to make really explicit, is that we have to rethink the way we interact with one another in terms of district to district.
Absolutely. Thanks for both of you for that insight about sort of revamping how education is done nowadays. Kara?
I'm listening to all of this, and you know, I'm a classroom teacher. That's all I've ever been for 22 years. I never had any desire to go into administration or anything like that. But I get to sometimes work with my administrators on projects. And part of that is because I was selected as a teacher of the year. And it didn't really seem fair to me that I got to be on committees and maybe have my voice heard just because of this label. And I really think that more teachers need to be at the table. And Karen touched on it earlier. We also need our special educators at tables where big conversations are happening. And it doesn't mean that the teachers always know the best way to do something or that the district should always listen to their suggestions, but we need to be treated like experts. So to have educators of all kinds in discussions on committees, doing work, giving input, being part of the research into a new strategy or a new curriculum or whatever it happens to be, is so important to make people feel connected to their profession and then to their district or their building. And if you can't help people feel connected to where they are and what they're doing, they're not going to stay. Or they might stay, but they're just in their room with their door closed and they never they never do anything to build community or culture. And that's the problem, is that a school, and I don't really like to think of work as family, but a school is a type of a family. And if everybody at the building doesn't really know each other or like each other, or they're not listened to, then you don't have anything even close to a family. You don't even have a team. You just have a bunch of separate people working separately. And that's really, that doesn't work for a school. That can't be how a school is. And along with that too, I think that this villainization of unions, right? That unions are somehow separate from the teachers and from the workers is destroying a lot of morale, because I'm a member of my union. I do leadership things with them. I have enjoyed it. I have learned so much, but I'm also a full-time teacher and I love students and I work extra hours all the time. They're not separate, you know? And so districts, and my district does a really nice job of it. And I know a lot of districts do, but some don't. Districts need to work with their union leadership too and recognize that the leaders in their unions, if they have one, right? I know not all districts and not all teachers are unionized. I know that. But if you have one, that should be a source of connection building, and that should be a source of expertise, not something contentious. So when you bring people to the table, it doesn't always have to be union leadership by any means. You need to have lots of voices. I just think that we don't have to separate those, and teachers don't have to be an afterthought. We can be a part of any conversation that has to do with kids, because at the end of the day, a teacher's working conditions are a student's learning conditions. That's all there is to it. What we do in the classroom affects kids every single day, every hour of the day.
Excellent point there. These are all amazing suggestions. So thank you to everyone for sharing your ideas. And I really hope that some of these start to come to fruition. Kira, you were the Michigan Teacher of the Year last year, so obviously you are well sought after for other jobs, not just teaching, but I'm sure on the administrative side as well. But you're specifically choosing to remain a teacher. Please tell us about a recent experience you had that helped reaffirm your decision.
And I'm glad Chris is here because he knows this one. So I had applied for a position, and I was excited about the idea of doing something that was more of a helping teachers, the consultant position, instead of being in the classroom. You know, it's been 22 years. I thought, hey, maybe I'll try it. And I had so much fun doing the interview. And then it started to inch towards maybe, oh, they might actually want me to do this job. That's kind of interesting. And I was feeling very valued. But then I got a little nervous about, you know, do I really want to leave? And it was that exact day. One of the things I do for my school is I help place student teachers in my school through Oakland University. And so that was the day the student teachers were coming to meet with us, and we let them come in person, everyone, you know, wearing their masks. And we met in the media center with these five bright, shiny, energetic young people who were just equal parts terrified and excited. And I'm sitting there and I'm listening to them. And I just had this moment, like, I can't leave. Like, they're going to be here next year. One of them is going to be placed with me. I don't want to go anywhere. I need to stay. And it was just kind of a reminder that I do love what I do. I love teaching teachers and I love teaching kids. And so it didn't feel right to leave yet. I don't know, maybe in another year or two, I'm not sure. I don't know how many more years I'm going to stay in the classroom, but it was a good reminder for me that if I want this profession to survive, if I want it to thrive, if I want to make some of those changes that Carol had talked about and Karen had talked about, that I have to be here for them. It feels like I need to be right here in the thick of it to make sure that we survive and that our kids get everything that they deserve from us and that we create more teachers. That's what we need to do.
Well, one thing is certain, your students and your school district are very, very lucky to have you. So not all hope is lost for education by any means, but obviously from this discussion, changes are needed. And to all of our listeners, remember, you know, like Chris was saying, advocate for and support your education professionals, whether it's on the local level with your school district or talking to legislators, all of that helps. And last but not least, thank you again to all of you for being on the show. This podcast was brought to you by Oakland Schools Intermediate School District's Communication Services and is produced by Media Production and Distance Learning Manager Mark Hansen. Oakland Schools is a regional service agency in Oakland County, Michigan, that offers support services to school personnel, which are better delivered regionally and provide cost, size, and quality advantages to those we serve. I have been your host for this podcast, Sarah Davis, and you can find this and future episodes of Educationally Speaking on our Oakland Schools website at oakland.k12.mi.us/podcast and Anchor FM. We hope you will join us for our next episode, where we will continue to bring you topics that affect every student every day.